The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Queen Elizabeth II became the longest reigning monarch in the history of the United Kingdom. The Final Edition asked the man on the street, what do you think?
Thanks, Obama.
I think she's really sort of been phoning it in the last decade or so.
She hasn't lost her looks.
I'd still fuck her.
She killed Diana!
Hey, she's been on the throne for 63 years. Eat some roughage!
Well, she outlasted Freddie Mercury.
Oh, Gunda? Oh, I think it's right jolly, eh?
She reigned for a long time until she got old. Now she's just kind of dripping.
Two things Charles always wanted to be and he never will. A tampon and king.
You know, if I had access to all those jewels all my life, just once I would just walk into that room, lock it behind me and jizz all over it.
This is CNN's exclusive interview with presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton about the email server controversy that has dogged her candidacy. Former First Lady Senator and Secretary Clinton, you are being investigated for using a private email server for classified government communications. Do you have something you wish to say about that?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Certainly.
And I just want to say, and I know a lot of people have already been hearing this, but I just want to say I'm sorry, and I apologize. I apologize for what I did. I made a mistake. I am sorry.
You don't sound sorry.
No, I really, truly, and honestly, sincerely am sorry.
No, that's still not there.
No, I am sorry. I am very deeply sorry, and I just want the American people to know how sorry I really, truly am.
Okay, admittedly, you're often, I don't know, you're not always convincing
I'm sorry.
Anyway.
I'm very sorry.
Okay, no,
I apologize.
Okay, the words are there. You just don't.
No, I'm really sorry. I am.
No,
very,
still not.
I feel terrible.
No, you don't look like you feel terrible. You don't sound like you feel terrible.
No, I really, seriously, I do. I do. I am very, very sorry.
Okay, let me try this. What do you think you did wrong?
Okay, you know what? I'm just apologizing. Can you just accept the apology? Can you just accept that I'm sorry?
But you don't know what you did wrong.
No, I'm sorry, okay? I'm just saying I'm sorry.
The words are there,
no,
and I heard the sorry part.
Okay,
that was
you
fine.
Know what?
You
I'm not
it.
Sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry about anything. I'm not sorry about the emails. I'm not sorry about Benghazi. I'm not sorry about Whitewater. God damn it.
And now, in other news, sandstorms are reported throughout Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. And in his last week with us before going back to Harvard, he speaks Latin, but he can't get a Starbucks run right. Oh, we sent our summer intern, Alex Roberts, to investigate.
With sandstorms expected to more than 3 days, local authorities, people to stay indoors. Back to you in the studio.
This is Stock Market Watch with your host, Roy Cantor.
The Dow is up. The Dow is down. It's, oh, Christ, I don't know. It's all machines.
go to our stock analyst, Cheryl Nicholson. Cheryl, what? I mean, just, oh, God, what?
Everything was okay, and then someone said, hey, what about Europe? I mean, Europe could just die, right? And China, for God's sake, and then somebody couldn't find a key to the men's room, and the market shot itself!
Oh, Jesus, I didn't even think about Europe.
Fucking Europe, right?
Yeah, Saul Merritt at the commodities desk. Saul, corn. How can nobody be buying corn?
There's no God!
It's corn!
I can't breathe!
I hate to break in here, Roy, but the Middle East!
Ah, shit biscuits!
The fucking Middle East!
We're all gonna die!
Ah! Ah! God fucking watch!
Dominus Deus Rex Celestis. Greetings, fellow Catholics. It has recently come to my attention that the Vatican's new laws on marriage annulment were unclear. So I, Pope Frankie, am here to explain everything. What's a reasonable cause? Well, pretty much anything from...
Oops, it was incest.
And...
Sorry, I accidentally committed bigamy.
To...
She's a bit of a head case and her taste in music sucks.
To...
Seriously, it's been 5 years and he still doesn't know what a clitoris is.
Plus, new fast-track options. But, Pope Frankie, I hear you say, how is that a basically not divorce? Because, my child, divorce is wrong. Did Jesus go to divorce in Galilee? No, he did not. That's just the way it is. Sorry, not sorry. Divorce is out. Not on the table, but annulment is in. Totally fine. No problem there. Hope that's all clear now. So this is Pope Frankie signing off by saying, call your mother, say your prayers, and join the Catholic Church. We're free snacks.
For a critique of Obama's presidency, we interview the war criminal Dick Cheney again. Mr. War Criminal Vice President Cheney, welcome back to Fox News.
The pleasure's all mine, I assure you.
No, it gives us pleasure as well. Mr. War Criminal Vice President, you led America into a war with Iraq with changing goals and no exit strategy, leaving a power vacuum. So let me ask you this. What's wrong with Obama's foreign policy?
I've been thinking about that. This president caused ISIS. He easily could have prevented it by invading some other country, like Estonia, and torturing prisoners. I believe we'd have been greeted as liberators.
Your term ended with a catastrophic financial meltdown. What's wrong with Obama's economic policy?
George W. Bush gave us tax cuts and deregulation, and they worked perfectly except for the deficit and the crash and the unemployment and the two wars we didn't budget. But... you solve that with tax cuts and deregulation.
Mr. War Criminal Vice President, can we come back again and get your opinion on more stuff?
I'll be right here.
And now, an all-new episode of Life at St. Paul's School.
Hey, Kelly, I was just wondering, what are you up to on Friday night?
Friday night? That's senior salute night.
I know. I was just wondering, if you're not doing anything, if I could maybe rape you on the rooftop that night?
Oh, that's so nice of you to ask, but I already told Bobby Cavalli that he could rape me that night.
Hey! Who are you talking to my girlfriend?
Bobby, be nice. He's just looking for a girl to rape on senior salute night. We should help him.
Oh, that's okay. I'll figure it out.
No, we want to help. How about Mrs. Novak?
Oh, a science teacher? Gross. She's totally unrapeable.
That's okay. I'll just do what other nerds do on senior salute night.
Kill their parents for making them ugly?
I was going to say commit suicide.
Excuse me, is this St. Paul's Academy?
Is that a black guy?
Yeah, dude, prison's that way.
No, I'm just here to perform the school shooting.
Oh, okay.
So I've never done this before, but I'm pretty sure this is the part where y'all start screaming.
Oh, okay.
Hey!
What?
Save some of that for rape night!
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Who Pull up your pants, we're back! It's the Final Edition Radio Hour!
This is Food Beat, where we patrol the latest in food. This week, Two Glasses, One Fork, and One Plate in West Los Angeles.
I'm here at Two Glasses, One Fork, and One Plate on La Cienega with the owner, Ronnie Mason. Ronnie, this place used to be called Three Plates because you only had three plates, then Two Plates when you broke one, then Two Forks. So I guess you only have two glasses, one fork, and one plate. How's business?
Why do you come here? To remind me of my failures?
I'm sorry.
Just finish your goddamn omelet!
Okay.
Why do I always have to wait for the plate?
It's okay. It's okay. Here, just take the plate. I'm done anyway.
Hey, Ronnie! Go change your side again!
Shut your head hole, you hideous pig woman! If this restaurant still had a knife, I would kill all of you!
That's Two Glasses, One Fork, and No Plates on La Cienega. And this is Food Beat.
We're thinking of opening a second restaurant on Pico.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Focus Group. I'm Howard W. Mintz, and I'm a Republican pollster. You're here because you represent a cross-section of Republican voters, and we're just trying to find out who you like for president in 2016.
We like Trump.
Yeah. Donald's awesome.
Thank you. We haven't started yet. I'm going to ask you questions about the candidate's personality traits, and I want you to respond as honestly as you can. Whatever you do, don't say what you think I want to hear.
No problem, pal. You're going to hate our guts.
Fine. Now, when I say the word experience, which Republican candidate for president do you think of?
Reagan.
I mean of the candidates who are alive today.
That's a trick question.
No, I just want you to tell me the candidate you think has the most relevant experience to hold the office.
Why don't you just ask us which candidate's father and brother were both president?
I'm not trying to trick you. I'm just trying to ascertain. I'm just trying to determine which candidates you associate with which feelings. For example,
our feeling is this. We like Trump. Excuse me, love him.
Yeah, that's right.
We love the Donald.
Love him.
Okay.
Really, really rich.
This is all extremely interesting. Let's try something else. Here's a phrase you may be familiar with, thin-skinned. Do you know what thin-skinned means?
Yeah. What about it?
I don't like where this is going.
When I say thin-skinned, which candidate do you think of most? Okay, let's see who doesn't fit that description. Well, Jeb Bush wouldn't fit it. Marco Rubio wouldn't fit it. Scott Walker. Mike Huckabee. Which of the candidates for president does not handle criticism well? In fact, when you criticize him, he lashes out and hurls insults at you.
Chris Christie.
That's it. Chris.
Yeah, yeah, that Christie. Guy's got nothing. Glass chin, fat bastard.
That's true, but...
But that's not the guy you're thinking about, is it?
I assure you, I'm not thinking about any candidate in particular.
Right. Yeah, you love
Bush. Yeah, you're in Bush's pocket.
Yeah, look, Donald Trump is not thin-skinned. You are.
Yeah. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. Moving on to a totally different question. When I use the phrase, respects women, which candidate does not come to mind?
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton is not one of the choices.
Bet she isn't.
I'm just asking you about Republicans now.
How about Carly Fiorina?
You think Carly Fiorina doesn't respect women?
Oh, I thought you meant which woman do I have no respect for?
All right, great. Now, let's talk about ideology. I'm not sure you folks are aware of this, but one of the major Republican candidates for president has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Democrats. Think about it. A man who says he's a Republican but gives money to Democrats. He actually helps Democrats win. Is that really what you would call a true Republican?
Look, buddy, we love Trump. Everyone in this room loves Trump.
and there's nothing you can do about it.
Shove it up your butt, Mr. Pollster.
Okay.
Put on a pole.
Terrific. I don't mind. Really, I don't. It's a free country.
Yeah, a little too free.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's try one last thing just for fun. A hypothetical situation. Suppose Donald Trump was not running for president.
You wish.
No, really, just humor me, guys, okay? Just in the interest of polling data, supposing Donald Trump were to drop out of the race.
Don't even say that.
I'm simply trying to learn which candidate you would gravitate toward in the unlikely event that Donald Trump...
I'd never vote again.
I'd vote for him anyway, as a tribute.
As angry as I already am, that'd make me a million times angrier.
Trump says what we're all afraid to say.
I hate Mexicans.
What most of us are afraid to say.
Okay, focus group. Let's try to focus. If Donald Trump were no longer in the race, which of the remaining candidates would you be most likely to support?
I don't know. Maybe Ben Carson?
Yeah, Carson maybe. He's an outsider, too. Plus, he has absolutely no experience.
I agree. Also, he's a brain surgeon, and he hates Obamacare.
It's Trump or nobody, do you hear me? We have to stick together!
So, three of you would vote for Carson.
Yeah, I'd vote for Obamacare, too.
Do not indulge this man's filthy speculations. He's trying to destroy our dreams!
Not that I don't love Trump, man. Relax, but like, what if he wasn't around?
Excuse me. Folks, can I just say one thing? Look, folks, here's the bottom line. The people in charge of these things, they're giving the nomination to Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush is getting the nomination, okay? So vote for anybody you want. Just please understand how the world really works. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to make a phone call.
Do you think that's true? No matter who we vote for, they're going to give it to Bush?
Probably. All those insiders are in the tank for Bush.
Yeah, they're just pretending to be worried about Trump.
Or maybe not.
The Final Edition Radio Hour presents 10 Things Never to Say to Someone Who is Struggling with Depression. Number 10.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
Number 9.
You've just been drafted by the New York Jets.
Number 8.
Depression? Fucking loser.
Number 7.
Your womb is so polluted, I can't even have a fucking little baby with you.
Number 6.
I got you a cheese log.
Number 5.
ISIS has apparently destroyed the ancient temples of Bel and Baal-Shemen in Palmyra. Archaeologists call the loss irreplaceable.
Number 4.
I think the waiter's spitting your food.
Number 3.
My legs! I can't feel my legs!
Number 2.
Actor Keanu Reeves has been cast to play Tevye in a new Broadway staging of Fiddler on the Roof!
And now... Number 1.
So, do you like cock?
Welcome back to the Bob Scott Show. Substituting for Bob Scott is God.
Hello, you're on the air with God.
Hey, God, will you do your famous dentist routine?
Oh, man, I'm sick of people requesting that. Line 2, you're on the air with God.
What?
This is God. You're talking to me. The one, the only, the holy trio, Father, Son, Holy Ghost, the light, resurrection, the guy in the robe, the universal concept of morality and matter.
Ah, jeez. Sorry, wrong number.
Hi, you're on the air with God. Hello. You're on the air.
What are you wearing? Is this 976 tits?
No.
Well, who is this?
It's the Lord Almighty up above.
Well, what are you wearing?
Line 3, you're on the air with God.
Yeah, what's your opinion on this whole Israel-Palestine thing?
Oh, no. I'm not getting involved in that. I don't want to be called anti-Semitic.
We return after the break to the Bob Scott Show, hosted by God.
And now, in other news, the journal Pediatrics published a study this week showing a rise in the number of teenagers using vape cigarettes to smoke cannabis. So we sent Alex, our summer intern, to investigate. Interesting fact about Alex. Having a parent on the board of directors in no way influenced him getting this internship. Over to you, Alex.
I'm here outside the Mandy Patinkin Center for Youth, Arts, and Judo in a disused badminton court in Morningside, where this group of teenagers has been vaporizing marijuana all afternoon.
Who's this motherfucker?
Oh, well, there's a strong aroma of a pot in the air. If I breathe in deeply. Yes, yes. Weed or, quite possibly a skunk.
Are you for real right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's pot, all right. Whoa. So, back to you in the studio. Hey. Say, fellas, you want to order a Domino's? Mashal.
The following is a paid commercial announcement for Professor Krill's Automatic Imaging Deliverance System. It literally develops pictures instantly. And now, here he is. He's behind the times. He's out of touch. He's Professor Krill.
Hello, everybody. And welcome to the world of now technology.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here with the amazing Professor Krell, and today he'll be telling you about his newest picture-taking invention, the Automatic Imaging Deliverance System.
That's right, Susan. How amazing is it to think that soon the average person will be able to develop pictures immediately after taking them using my Automatic Imaging Deliverance System, or as I like to call it, AIDS. Now,
wait, you're calling it AIDS?
You got it, Susan. You see, it is my goal to modernize, revolutionize, and convenientize picture-taking with this space-age device. You heard me right. I will not rest until every family in America has my AIDS. Are there any questions?
Yes. Once I get your AIDS, can I give it to someone else?
Of course. You can give my AIDS to anyone, but why would you want to? I would hope most people would go out and get the AIDS on their own. Next question.
Yeah, I've heard your AIDS will make me sick. Is that true?
Only if you put your penis inside the film compartment. Look, I've been exposing people to my AIDS for months now, and there have been no ill effects. Next question.
Yes. Is it true you're also working on a controlled arterial numbing compound expeller receptor?
You mean cancer? How I wish that were true. Next question.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. You seem a little out of touch. Where the hell have you been for the last 25 years?
In my lab developing AIDS. Where the hell else?
He's behind the times. He's out of touch. He's the amazing Professor Krell.
As the news that the band One Direction will be taking a break shocked the nation and the world, we at the Final Edition Radio Hour take a look back at some of their greatest moments. That was One Direction, a look back at some of their greatest moments.
They don't like it when I roll my R's. Here if I do it more. Next on the Final Edition.
Okay, I think you should do one of these.
What?
I'm just
you don't improvise, that you're telling me?
No, I can't improvise this. There's not enough substance to get my teeth into it.
After these messages, the Final Edition Radio Hour will go to pi squared.
We will be right back after this.
Yeah, do something French. Imagine drinking wine.
Just did.
We'll be back to discuss on the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Okay, these are incomprehensible. That's enough.
We'll be back soon with more of the Final Edition
Radio Hour!
Hi, I'm Tony Hendra. Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour. I'm very honored in this week's show to present the first of a three-part interview with Lewis Lapham, the legendary editor of Harper's Magazine and currently editor-in-chief of the extraordinary Lapham's Quarterly. You will not regret Googling Lapham's Quarterly and becoming a subscriber. for its intent is to sublimely subvert pretty much everything Google holds dear. I asked Lewis to share his thoughts on the subject of satire and its role, both currently and historically, in what we laughingly refer to as our democracy.
Okay, so I'm speaking with Lewis Lapham, who is the editor-in-chief of Lapham's Quarterly. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And who was for almost 30 years the editor of Harper's Magazine, one of the nation's most respected organs of intelligent dissent, and possibly one of the most distinguished, if not the most distinguished, political and social essayist in the writing in the United States at the present time. Would you say those were accurate descriptors?
I would say it was a little over the top, but I'm delighted with it.
Well, indeed. And I'm delighted to be here. But I'm also fascinated that given these extraordinary credentials, as his co-writer on his memoir organized a tribute to George Carlin a year after his death, because we had talked about George Carlin in the past, I asked you to do one of the tributes. You did an extraordinary tribute to him, which was shorter and finer than any other tribute, even though there were tributes from stars like Ben Stiller, Whoopi Goldberg, Louis C.K., and many others. So I wanted to get the conversation going on what it was or what it is about George that prompted you to actually say things like, George Carlin is in the tradition of Ambrose Bierce, H.L. Mencken, Philip Wiley, Sinclair Lewis, Terry Southern, Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce, Kurt Vonnegut, and Tom Paine. And the burden, I think, of your appreciation of George was that he stood up and, thinking out loud, proposed that he did not agree with the official version.
Yes. I mean, he did it very well. He did it in language that, like Paine's and like Twain's, was easy to understand. It wasn't about himself. He was not trying to show off or in any way be smarter than anybody else in the room. And he wasn't doing it to vengefully or snarkily or ironically. He was doing it passionately and honestly, and because it was something that these were sores in the body politic that he clearly saw. Twain used to think of satire as a kind of refining fire to burn away the hospitality tents of cant under which the society is blissfully and happily content to live most of the time. The Archibald MacLeish was himself a fine poet, at one time a librarian of Congress. I can't remember the exact quote, but his point was that dissenting opinion was when somebody broke loose momentarily from the herd and managed to say what he or she himself thought, had seen, understood, guessed at, but was true to his own or her own observation. Twain played for laughs. Laughs, he thought, were the great healing, cauterizing balm to heal the wounds that he knew everybody, man, woman, or child, in his audience had come up against in the course of living in what was, in Twain's mind, in the late 19th century, a truly brutal society. He once said that a society that is the sum of its vanity and greed is not a society at all. It is a state of war. And Carlin, I think, saw it somewhat the same way. And he was, as was Twain, a humanist, an idealist. He was not a cynic, at least as I understood him. I didn't think Twain was a cynic. I certainly didn't think Paine was a cynic, and Vonnegut was not a cynic.
Absolutely not, no.
And that was the strength of Carlin's satire, and that's why people wanted to listen to and were heartened by what he said, I think. Not amused, not condescending,
right,
but genuinely heartened. Trying, and here's a man who's trying to, you know, speak to the true terms of the contract under which we happen to be living.
Right. One of the things you said, actually, was that he sent his humor on a moral errand.
Yes, he did.
Which I think is a Twainism, is it not?
Yes. Well, I also applied right. that to Twain. That's right. my phrase.
That's
not
your
Twain's.
Phrase.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
That's okay.
No, but that's a wonderful way to describe George. And another thing you said, which I think was very much in the front of George's mind at all times, was that he wanted to preserve his fellow American from becoming shriveled sheep.
Right. That's a Twain that I... That's yeah. a phrase I borrowed from Twain. Shriveled sheep was one of his phrases, and the...
There's another one, too, I noticed in the autobiography, where he says, we are discreet sheep.
Yeah.
We look to see where the drove is going, and then we follow the drove.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Most people do that. I mean, it's...
Right, but his point was more generous than simply demeaning people. It was that people actually know the truth privately, but they don't express it.
Right.
Because the drove doesn't express it.
And to hear it expressed publicly is heartening. It makes you think, well, I'm not alone in this.
Right, yeah. But it's threatening to those who want you to remain sheep.
Yes, and I think that's... I mean, I know that Twain drew big audiences. How big were the audiences that Carlin... attractive.
Oh, they were sizable. I mean, he would play... His average was probably between 1,200 and 1,500 seats.
Well, you see, that's good. I mean, it's... Because we're not talking with about mass entertainment. I mean, I don't think satire works as mass entertainment because...
It's too disturbing.
It's too
yeah.
threatening.
Yeah.
People go to the movies or people go to the Broadway shows because they want to escape or they want to be lulled into some sort of complacent and content. You know, sheep, so the sheep may safely graze.
Oh, getting into Bach now.
And you can't safely graze on right. the satire of Carlin
right.
or Twain or,
Twain.
Or
yeah.
so on.
Yes. I mean, actually, I think one of the most interesting things that you also said was that he performed live. I mean, he did his HBO yeah. specials, but he did them once every 2 years. And that right. was... He described that as an advertisement for himself.
Right.
But what he really did was build a vast audience, 1,200 or 1,500 at a time, of living, breathing human beings who were actually listening to his words.
Right.
Not listening
yes.
to a picture of his words.
Yeah.
And I think that is where, as you put it, he provided a counterpoint to the tragedy of the human predicament.
And I think that's why satire is better suited to the stage or to the lecture. Twain used to do it live, too. As you know, he was a constant figure, a leading figure on the American lecture circuit in the late 19th century, which was a big and, I mean, ongoing means of education and entertainment everywhere in the country. And he also lectured in Australia, in India, in Germany, in England.
In India, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the... And I think it needs a live audience. I see. I think it's very hard to make satire work on television because it has to be cut to time. And, you know, you have, I don't know, whatever it is, 12, 8, 13 minutes, and then you cut to a car commercial or a beer commercial, which is the exact antithesis of humane expression. I mean, and the trouble with society as a whole is that most of our language is the language of advertising. It's the mm-hmm. language of the political
yes.
campaigns.
Indeed.
It's the average. It's the 15,000 ads we see every day, you know, on billboards, in the back of taxis, in magazines, you know, in elevators. The language of advertising is really debilitating.
Well, the attitude is one of basically a pleading. It's asking you or trying to convince you to buy something. I mean,
right,
and,
yeah,
and
sure.
it's yeah. that is the antithesis of satire, which is certainly not pleading with you, telling you the truth.
Right.
Or truth telling.
It's giving you something. It's not trying to scrunch something out of you.
So you would, but I think at the end of your wonderful analysis of his autobiography, you say this. We'll come back to Twain, I think, several times, but you say, since we're talking about this, you've made a great case for Twain not simply being a sort of folksy folklorist,
right,
which is the kind of niche that, as you said, the reviewers of his autobiography when it came out at the New York Times and the New Yorker chose to see him as an amiable after-dinner speaker, a man right. who told funny stories and yeah. smoked cigars and wore a white suit, and that he was, in fact, far more, as one of his executives put it, generous, intuitive, and sympathetic, but undiluted, merciless, and final as well.
Right.
So then you say, as your envoi to the review, you say, our contemporary brigade of satirists doesn't play with fire. It doesn't play with what Twain called painted fire, right?
That's correct.
Doesn't play with fire. The heavy calibers of Twain's humor have gone missing from our news and entertainment media because the audiences made for television don't look with favor upon the kind of jokes that cast doubt on the guarantee of happiness and the promise of redemption. Taught to believe that democracy is something quiet, orderly, and safe, a peaceful idea supportive of think tank viewings with alarm, and the keeping of pets as fragrant as Alan Greenspan and General David Petraeus, they prefer the safer forms of satire fit for privileged and frightened children. Twain was an adult.
I think that's a pretty good end to that piece. Whatever, I wrote that 3 or 4 years ago, but right. I would still stand behind every word of that.
So you wouldn't see this sort of supposed exemplars of modern satire like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert as satirists, or would you see them as something more diluted, or would you see them as not satirists at all?
Well, I can't really answer that question because I have never paid much attention, right. and I should have, I guess, to The Daily Show. And so I've only seen Stewart, you know, maybe 5 or 10 times, and same thing's true of Colbert. My sense of satire gone weak in the knees is more along the lines of somebody like Bill Maher, who I've seen a couple of times, and simply see him as a front man for the established order.
Mm-hmm. You know, really? I think that would be most irritating to Bill Maher. Well,
I don't know Bill Maher, right. so... I mean, he did make a good point, I think, when he said that you could say anything you wanted about the pilots that flew the planes into the trade towers, but you could not say that they were cowards. And for that, he was severely punished by the authorities. I think they took him off the air for a couple of weeks.
Yes, indeed.
But he was right about that. And so maybe I'm doing him a disservice, too. But too often, when I see what passes for satire, I think it's a way of letting the audience gently off the hook. In other words, okay, we see through the screen of lies. We can distinguish appearance from reality. We know that we are governed by fools and led to our deaths by pompous ideologues along the lines of Dick Cheney or Paul Wolfowitz and so on. I mean, most of the establishment in Washington and many of the better-known columnists for the major newspapers. But okay, all of us here, you know, watching Stewart or watching Colbert, watching Maher, okay, we're in on the joke, and good for us. And that's as far as it has to go. I guess that's heartening, but there's not enough edge in it to make it really heartening, I don't think.
Well, I would say that one of the key points, even of what passes for the strongest satire on television, or even the strongest satire in the comedy clubs, is that it's almost always about individual politicians or individuals on television in some way, pundits or writers. It's never about the system itself. It never calls into question the underlying principles of the system exactly, or exposes exactly what the system is, which, as you say, this is not a democracy, it's a state of war. And it's even pretty obvious from the people strutting around the countryside with pistols strapped to their hips that it is indeed a sort of slow-motion civil war that we're in at the moment. But no one... Even Jon Stewart and Colbert will not come out and say things like that.
Yes, they pick easy targets.
Right, Fox News, for example.
In other words, they don't pick on Jamie Dimon, let's say, mm-hmm. at Chase Bank.
Indeed. The Final Edition does, but...
They don't pick on, you know, when Kissinger was in power, they don't pick on Kissinger. But it's not just calling him a war criminal. The more damaging way to approach Kissinger would be to compare him accurately to a hairdresser. In other words, here we have an American establishment that is, by and large, poorly educated, doesn't speak languages, knows very little of history, is easily fooled by somebody like Kissinger, and who can present them with a bespoke set of opinions. Kissinger kind of pretends that he's essentially the avatar reborn incarnation of Metternich, temporarily on loan from Congress of Vienna.
That's right, the balance of power. He talks about the balance of power. Right?
And you really have to think of him in terms of fashion designer who's providing fashionable opinions for the gentry.
Right. Part two of the interview with Lewis Lapham will appear on next week's show. And the Final Edition Radio Hour will be back in seconds.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, we gotta come up with a promo. Our listeners don't know enough about all the great stuff the Final Edition does. Even when we tell them, it's all this like blah 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 dot 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 www URL crap. No one gets what that is on radio. They just tune it out.
Well, I have the perfect way to hold their attention while we give them the goods. When I was at the National Lampoon in the 70s, our most famous cover had a cute mutt with a 38 Magnum to its head and the legend, "Buy this magazine or we'll shoot this dog."
Yeah, I remember that, but how does that help us? It was a visual image for a magazine.
Meet Freckles.
Freckles? Oh, there, there. Good boy. What's the matter then?
Also, meet my 38 Magnum.
Jesus Christ, you have a gun? Don't wave that thing around here. Is that thing loaded?
Sure is. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. If you don't stay tuned to this promo while Jeff gives you all the necessary info about our fabulous website and our fabulous YouTube channel and other fabulous stuff we do, I will shoot this dog.
Jesus, man, take the gun out of that defenseless animal's ear.
Uh-uh. Give him a goods, Jeff.
Oh, my God. Poor Freckles. Okay, fine. Hey, listeners to the Final Edition Radio Hour, you want more of what we do, go to thefinaledition.com. Our radio airs on this network on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at 8, as well as Wednesday at midnight. We've also got an album, we've got a Twitter feed, we've got a great YouTube channel, Facebook, everything you can want at thefinaledition.com.
Now, tell them to tap all that into their iPhones or leave themselves an audio memo.
No, I won't. I told them enough, Tony. I'm calling the SPCA.
Tell them, or the dog gets it. I'm cocking the gun right now.
Okay, listeners, please, write this down. TheFinalEdition.com. TheFinalEdition.com. Go there for everything you want from the Final Edition, or this crazy old British coot is going to plug old Freckles.
Okay, that wasn't so hard, was it? Come here, Freckles, you dumb old chum. Hey, get down! Get down! Get away from me! Get you crazy cunt!
Good job, Freckles! Get him! Sick him! Oh, yeah, this is Jeff Kreiser for the Final Edition Radio Hour on Progressive Voices on TuneIn. 8 p.m. Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Midnight on Wednesday.
No, Freckles, put that thing down! You don't have opposable thumbs! No!
Street.
Burning Man this year was infested with stink bugs. The Final Edition asked the man on the street, what do you think?
Wait, you could see the bugs too?
Hey, maybe we smell bad to them.
I don't know why they call it Burning Man, because there's this guy every year that goes there and he tries to take a piss and he says, I'm Burning Man!
The stink bugs at Burning Man. They have a new CD out?
Hope it's not hot there.
Changes the old expression. One in the pink, two in the stink bugs.
I vote for the stink bugs.
Hey, ladies, there are no stink bugs in my trailer.
I, for one, would like to change the entire event's name to Burning Person.
I guess the bugs were attracted by the lights. Kind of like teenagers are attracted to the lights. I don't like kids.
Just as long as nobody there is doing any drugs.
Welcome to Hillary Clinton's Email Scandal, the daily primetime show about Hillary Clinton's email scandal. With me, as always, are two other people from Fox News. Guys,
Thanks for being here.
No problem.
I have nothing else going on.
So what are the latest developments in the Hillary Clinton email scandal?
Well, as you know, Hillary Clinton used a private email server when she was Secretary of State, which is important.
Really important.
Huge.
She should not have done that.
So now a lot of emails are being made public.
And what kind of crazy stuff is in those emails?
Well, for one thing, Chelsea Clinton helped out relief efforts in Haiti.
Well, that's, I don't know, bad, I guess?
Maybe.
It proves Hillary can't be trusted with confidential information, because those emails are public now, because we made sure they were.
This is just like Whitewater.
Yeah, Whitewater.
Back in the 90s, the Clintons lost money in the Whitewater Development Corporation, and one of the other investors owned a savings and loan that failed. Was there a connection to the Clintons?
Republicans investigated for years, and you know what they found?
What?
Nothing.
Exactly. Very suspicious.
There was so much talk.
By us.
And so much investigation.
By us.
And there must have been something.
So why wasn't there?
Benghazi!
What were we talking about originally now?
The Hillary email scandal.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also turning up nothing when it should be turning up something.
Which is very suspicious.
And we'll talk again tomorrow as new developments develop. Here on the Hillary Clinton email scandal.
Summer's over. You're feeling pretty depressed, aren't you?
Yeah.
You have a gun to your head, don't you?
Uh-huh.
But you can't pull the trigger, can you?
The gun's too close to my head.
Sounds like you need a suicide selfie stick.
Whoa!
Suicide selfie sticks work just like regular selfie sticks. But instead of taking a selfie, you kill yourself.
Sweet!
No more holding a heavy gun against the side of your head or putting a filthy muzzle in your mouth. Now you can shoot yourself from up to 5 feet away and from every possible angle.
Amazing!
Try the popular overhead shot. Or do yourself in from down below. You can even shoot yourself in the back to make it seem like a homicide.
The suicide selfie stick rules!
So quit holding that gun with your own hand.
Okay.
And stop asking your friends to pull the trigger for you. They're busy, and you don't have friends.
Yeah, sorry.
Just strap your gun to the stick and fire away.
Okay. Here goes.
Oops. Keep practicing. You'll get it.
Hi, one ticket for the Magic Kingdom, please?
Here you go, but you can't come in with that suicide selfie stick.
But I wanted to blow my brains out in front of Pluto!
Sorry, we've had too many people getting smacked in the head with these things. Someone's liable to get hurt.
But...
Look, pal, you're just gonna have to shoot yourself without a selfie stick.
Fine.
Enjoy the park, and don't forget to turn the safety off.
Okay, say cheese, everyone!
Cheese!
Wait, is that a suicide selfie stick?
Oh my God!
And now, in other news, Walter Palmer, the dentist who murdered Cecil the Lion, returned to work today. So we sent Alex, our summer intern, to investigate. Fascinating fact. Alex saved the company $85 a month by recommending to his dad that we all buy Nespresso pods from reception instead of getting them for free. Smart thinking there, Alex. Anyway, Lion, dentist guy, over to you, Alex.
I'm here at River Bluff Dental in Bloomington, Minnesota, hoping to get some insight into Lion killer Walter Palmer's decision to return to work in the wake of the recent controversy.
Open wide.
So, you're Dr. Palmer's colleague. What did you think of his,
This is only gonna hurt a little bit.
Cecil! Legal! Protected area! Back to you, studio!
And now, Jim Earle with another tasteless obituary of a real dead person.
Dr. Wayne Dyer, former Catholic school driver's ed instructor. Dr. Wayne Dyer, internationally renowned motivational guru and one of the best-selling authors of all time, died Saturday after 75 tedious years of enduring his own bullshit. The cause of death was not immediately disclosed, although it probably had something to do with the universe finally mastering the art of manifesting its incredible force by killing somebody. When reached for comment, friend Tony Robbins said his death was, quote, but a transition from the living to the mystical realm of probate and estate division. The author, whose title of doctor held less validity than the title of skipper did on Gilligan's Island, was found dead, not dying, with the music still in him. Last year, Mind Body Spirit magazine ranked Dyer as the 8th most spiritually influential person in the world after Mickey Mouse and Hitler. A posting by Dyer's family on his Facebook page read, Wayne believed there was a spiritual answer to every problem, except parking. Please repost this 7 times if you really care about recycling. Dyer's most notable fans included Ellen DeGeneres and Oprah Winfrey, who embraced his idea that the power of positive thinking was the foundation for personal fulfillment. And when that doesn't work, there's always dog torture and chronic overeating. Dyer requested his remains be buried where his 3 ex-wives can't get at them.
Yo, what did you do this summer?
I can't talk about it, guys.
Oh, come on. I'm sure you had a little bit of fun.
Right,
wasn't there a girl?
Yeah, I met a girl. I got some really nice pussy.
Yeah? Well, lay it down, man.
Summer raping had me a blast.
Summer raping happened so fast.
I met a girl blindsided by me.
Met a boy crazy as could be.
Summer rape had me again. But oh, those raping nights. Oh, ella, 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 oh. Tell me more, tell me more. Did you get very far?
Tell me more, tell me more. Did he leave a big scar? He got in me before I was damn.
Yeah, I got in her like a big champ.
I got AIDS, I almost died.
I walked out with manly pride. Summer rape had me agape. But, those raping nights.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. The voices of the Final Edition are performed by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Dan Vitale, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Abby Parker, Rachel Rauch, Steve Rosenfield, James Mount, Rob Miller, Kayla Merrill, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. Credit to our writers at the Final Edition Radio Hour, Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Abby Parker, Jeff Chrysler, John Marshall, Barry Lank, Leslie Shapira, Kurt Weitzman, Kate Knowles, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler, West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio edited and engineered by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of the Final Edition LLC, copyright 2014.